I am telling you, we have got it covered tonight as far as technology, robocalls, AIM scams, click to cancel, subscription traps. We got it all covered. Helping us do that right now is Teresa Murray, a consumer watchdog with the U.S. Public Interest Research Group. Good evening, Teresa. How are you?
Good evening, John. I'm doing swell. I hope you are, too.
Yeah, I would imagine that there's plenty of public interest these days, just in general, about everything that you do.
Yeah, I mean, whether it's we're talking about scams, we're talking about canceled airline flights, predatory towing, junk fees, food recalls, toys that hurt children, there's all kinds of things going on.
It's a very busy time.
Yes.
You know, you mentioned canceling something, and, you know, there is many opportunities to bundle, opportunities to subscribe to something that says cancel anytime you want. And it always seems that when I want, that doesn't match what they want. Or what I want, they're going to put me through the ringer to get there. Why is that? Why do they make it so? I mean, they advertise it. I mean, I understand, you know, the come on, but it's almost like bait and switch.
Right. Well, the reason why you're having such difficulty is because it was supposed to be illegal starting last year, but the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals overturned it. The Federal Trade Commission back in 2024 had passed a rule, basically a law, saying that companies would have to make a subscription as easy to cancel as it was to sign up to begin with. Mm. And it is many steps. So if you signed up for something online in two steps, then you would have had to, they would have had to make sure that you could cancel it in two steps online. They couldn't make you call or call only on Fridays between 9 and noon when it's a full moon, you know, jump through all those kinds of hoops.
Right.
And then the other thing that was part of this rule was that a company would have to explain everything to you, all of the pricing, how long you had to cancel, you know, when the price could increase, all of that kind of stuff before it could accept your payment information. So those were the two biggest components, and a court blocked it and said it was basically procedural. So the good news is the FTC has actually reintroduced this, and we might end up seeing these click to cancel rules, you know, take effect sometime, maybe later on this year.
You know, I was reading in another publication, How to Save Money. And they went into a process of streaming services and subscribing to one when you want to see a special movie. And after that movie's there no more, you know, isn't there anymore, you cancel that. And then you go to another one and you take it and so on and so on. That's not that easy to do. I mean, it sounds great, but in reality, not so much.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and we put out a whole consumer guide on this, and I'm just not a huge fan of signing up for something that you have absolutely no intention of subscribing to. I mean, I realize, you know, you're a sports fan, you want to see something special, this game that's only on one channel, you know, one streaming option, and you're like, oh, hey, great, I'll put my payment information in, I'll watch the football game today or whatever, and then I'll cancel. And, you know, I mean, that's within the bounds. They tell you you can do that. You can cancel usually within 7 days. So it's not immoral or dishonest.
No,
but it's just not. It's not something that's necessarily a smart practice from a consumer standpoint. And to your point, it can come back to bite you because if you forget or you know your cancellation doesn't go through, then all of a sudden you're getting hit with some big Wamba charge. And it can be a whole mess to unravel just because you wanted to watch something one time. You know, even you have a good point. You have a good point. And a lot of this came about during COVID, especially because you had a lot of, like gym memberships, for example, that were difficult to cancel in person, even though the stinking gym was closed. And and also that's when a lot of people started really signing up for a lot of different streaming services because people were stuck at home.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think it's an accident, John, that a lot of these streaming services and other kinds of services, also like ordering things to be delivered, you know, food or pet products or personal health care products, you know, that was a lot of what the rage was during COVID. And so I don't think it's a coincidence that all these companies said, hey, look at all these people who are signing up for like recurring subscriptions, recurring product deliveries, and let's just figure out a way to screw them.
You know, you can't have a conversation literally about anything in this general area, or maybe anywhere, without touching on AI scams and robocalls, because they are so prevalent. My cell phone once in a while screens the phone call coming in, and I see that this alert comes up, and the phone is screening the content of the call, and 9 out of 10 times it's a scam. So
okay.
I've got scams. They may be AI scams. I don't know. I've had robocalls. I don't know if they're real people. I mean, if I can't carry a conversation with them, obviously they're not. But sometimes they can even do a little bit of that. I mean, how do we handle all of this?
Well, first of all, I mean, you're right that artificial intelligence has presented a lot of challenges in the world that we live in now, especially even compared with like 2 years ago. Shoot. Mm-hmm. Now, with robocalls, and basically our advice to people is really easy, John, is if you answer a phone call and it's unexpected, you should not give them any information, not your name, not your address, not your shoe size, nothing. And you sure as heck shouldn't give them any payment information. Now, you know, you can make an argument that all of these phone calls that we get, even if you don't answer it, it can break your concentration. You're working, you're having dinner, you're doing whatever, and they're annoying. They're annoying as heck. You know, that's the best case scenario. For a lot of people, you end up having, you know, senior citizens who lose their life savings because they fall for some kind of scam. So we, you know, we beg people, just beg them, don't answer unknown calls. Mm-hmm. It will go through to your voicemail. If it's important, they'll leave a voicemail. But if you do answer, don't disclose any information to anybody you weren't expecting to call you. Now, with that said, all of this AI stuff, I mean, here's the thing, I kind of laugh about it. It's not funny, but it is actually illegal through the Federal Communications Commission. They passed rules that it's illegal for a company or anybody to use an AI-generated voice in a robocall unless you consent to it. So, like,
what?
Who's gonna,
right.
Yeah, you can't even make
sure.
This up.
Check this
and,
box.
Yeah, so check this box. So without prior consumer consent, those kinds of calls are illegal. Well, here's the thing. I think it's pretty stupid that the FCC seems to think that this is going to help a lot of us, because people who are willing to scam you, they don't really have any qualms about breaking one more law,
no,
right? Because it's already
absolutely
illegal to rip people off. And
right.
It's like, oh, I used an AI-generated call, voice, you know. They don't care. And so, you know, because there are so few consequences with robocalls, the bad actors, a lot of them are overseas. Yes, it's illegal for anybody to make a robocall using an AI-generated voice, but you and I shouldn't really worry about that. We should just not even bother answering those calls or not giving information if the call is not expected.
As usual, great advice from Teresa Murray, consumer watchdog with the U.S. Public Interest Research Group, and we'll do more when we come back on 720 WGN. 720 WGN with John Landecker at 748. Teresa Murray is a consumer watchdog with the U.S. Public Interest Research Group. Why don't we spend a little time, and then we can circle back to some other things if there's more at the end, about the recalls that are going on. Because I know there's a number, you know, cars, even a coffee. What is it? What's being recalled today?
Well, let's see. Some of the most recent ones, of course, we're all, I think everybody's familiar, unless you've been living under a rock, with the Cyclospora involving,
yeah,
believe, you know, shredded lettuce. And we can come back to that because there's a lot that's not yet known, and people should still be careful of, especially produce that is not cooked. But we can come back to that.
Okay.
Yeah, so, like, the coffee is kind of weird because it contained bacteria that contaminated, you know, to cause botulism, basically. So it's over 3,000 gallons from Brooklyn Roasting Company. You've probably never heard that before. And it's actually distributed by Cold Brew. And it was bottles of coffee, of, you know, basically cold coffee. And It was not distributed in Illinois, as far as we know. So hopefully folks don't have to worry about that. It was mainly on the East Coast. And, you know, there have been some illnesses. But it's all the more reason, both with this one, and then there's also an egg recall that I know you want to talk about. And those didn't necessarily go through the same notification channels as most of the food recalls that we see. So I know you guys do a really good job of posting recalls on your webpage. Mm-hmm. And so it's just important for consumers, really everybody, to pay attention to news sources that are reliable like you guys. And then it's also important to shop at stores that you will get notifications from if they have a recalled product. Like if you use a store loyalty card, I can guarantee you that store is going to find out before you would get an email in your inbox or even before you guys could write up a news story or anybody else could. The grocery stores are notified first when there is some kind of food recall. And if you sign up for those, you will find out, you know, that, oh, hey, these eggs have been recalled, or this coffee in bottles has been recalled, or lettuce has been recalled. And that's just a good idea to keep yourself safe. And it's most important for people who in families where there are young children, elderly folks, people with compromised immune systems, or pregnant women. Or even somebody who's getting over, like, the flu. You know, you or me, and anybody who's in a compromised health, any of these kinds of things that we talk about can be that much worse and can send people to the hospital or in some cases, even kill them.
Turning to the world, the automotive world, now, is the Ford, they recalled some Broncos. Now, is this the story where, I'll never forget this, although I seem to have misplaced the brand name in my mind, that whatever was being recalled, they were told to park it at the end of the driveway because it might burst into flame. Which one is that?
Yeah, well, fortunately, this advisory, well, this is involving a little over 500,000 Ford Broncos, model years 2021 to 2026. Now, Ford says only about 1% of those 500,000 cars are actually affected. And what it is there's some kind of short in the wiring that can cause a fire. And that's bad. But only in about 1% of those cars or trucks. Now, the good news is, if there is good news, is this apparently does not just happen spontaneously when the car is parked. It would be while you're driving it, which is really special.
Oh, great.
So this one does not include the don't park in your garage or near any building warning. What it does have is, and this just makes me crazy, John. So we know about it today. It's on file with the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. Dealerships are getting information about it. But if you own one of these vehicles that's been recalled and could catch on fire while you're driving down the highway, you won't get a letter in the mail any earlier than August 24th. So like a whole month from now. And that's if you bought the car new. Because if you bought it used, you forget it. Just kiss it goodbye. You're not going to find out about it unless you find out it from a news source or a relative or something like that. I mean, some states will put the notice on when you go to register your car again. They'll say, hey, you got a recall. So it's really important. What I recommend for people is to register your VIN or do a search for your VIN on the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration website, which you can go to at safercar.gov. So safercar.gov. You can enter your VIN, and it'll tell you whether there are any outstanding recalls. And you can get the app. I have it. You can register your VINs, and it will give you an alert if there is a recall on your car, no matter how long you've owned it, no matter whether you're the original owner or the 10th owner. And it's great. So, you know, like you were talking about, did you have one of the cars that you were supposed to not park in a garage?
Fortunately, no, I did not.
Okay. I actually know somebody at PERG who just got a recall like a month ago involving another vehicle just recently that is not supposed to be parked in a garage. And it's either a hybrid or it's an EV. And so in order to charge it, you have to park in the garage. So he's like, what in the heck am I going to do? I didn't have an answer for him, but it is really important for people to keep up on this and take these safety warnings seriously because, you know, especially when we're talking about fires, we've had other vehicle recalls that involve like brakes going out or the steering column going out, just, you know, all really special stuff. And there are usually every year something between like 25 to 30 million vehicles recalled every single year. Now, some of them are for stupid reasons, you know, like, oh, hey, the back passenger window will not go up the last centimeter. And then other recalls are quite serious, like what we're talking about.
Well, it makes sense, at least to me, that if you combine a battery with gasoline, say in a hybrid, that there is, it may be minuscule, but the ingredients are there for a spark to fly. I mean, it just makes common sense. Not that you shouldn't buy that car if it's been safety tested and checked and approved, but, you know, every time you make some sort of progress in the technology of an electric vehicle, and you still have your hands on the gasoline and it's a crossover, you know, there's a possibility there. And even if the electric vehicle is all electric, well, everybody knows what electricity can do. I mean, just because it's in a car, it doesn't get a free pass.
Yeah, I'm not smart enough to know about that kind of stuff. I just know that any product that we buy, whether we pay a dollar for it or $50,000 for it, if it's put out to market, it should be safe.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, shoot, you know, speaking about fires, like one of the things that I'm real hot on lately, and I think a lot of your listeners would be affected by, are these portable chargers that you have, you know, to charge your phone, like if you're
yes.
on an airline flight or just
yeah.
running around, you're going to the park
yeah.
for the day. There are so, so many of those little portable chargers that are recalled because guess what? They cause fires. And I think that that's not something a lot of folks are aware of. It's one of those things where it works until it doesn't. And you don't, you, if you were to do an online search for, you know, portable charger fire or portable charger recall, like your eyes would pop out. And so if you or your listeners own any of these kinds of devices, I would recommend checking frequently and often to make sure that they haven't had recalls or even, frankly, just complaints. Because it takes a long time for a product to get recalled. It can be months
yeah.
or years.
Well, aside from the recall itself, okay, how many different types, you know, you go into a gas station even, and they have a display of USB chargers and anything that you would need to charge your phone. But those that are in the gas station and some other places are not made by the same people who made the phone. Does that, right? I mean,
well, yes. I mean, you know, and I'm not necessarily saying that if you have an iPhone that you should only purchase,
yeah.
You know, Apple chargers. And in fact, I'm not even aware, unless you have like a MagSafe phone, I don't even know if you can buy, I don't know if Apple makes like the portable chargers that I'm talking about, they
right,
might, but I
right.
don't offhand think. But there are lots of reputable manufacturers out there and ones that you would even find recommended by phone manufacturers. You know, by Google for Android phones, you know, Samsung, you know, Apple. And so it's just important to buy your products from a trusted company.
Yes, of course.
You see a lot of these, like, I bet you the ones that you're talking about for some overpriced USB, whatever, mm-hmm. in the corner gas station, you know, on your way traveling out west. If you look at who the manufacturer is, I bet you've never heard of them before.
True.
And it's probably got 20 letters, and you can't even quite figure out what country it's manufactured in. And, yeah, so that's just bad news. I don't know how desperate you would have to be to have a charger that you would buy something like that from a company you've never even heard of before.
You know, we got a couple of minutes left, and I didn't mean to grab the wheel, but is there anything that you would like to get to as we wrap this up?
Well, I mentioned real quick about the Cyclospora, which, you know, right now I was trying to see if there was any news today, but this is a big thing, and so we're at, what did I come to here? Yeah, so it's kind of confusing because the FDA has put out information, and then it was like, oh, hey, psych, it was a false positive on the lettuce from Taylor Farms. Which, by the way, John, Taylor Farms, which has been implicated in a lot of these cases, is the same company that supplied the onions to McDonald's a couple of years ago when we had the problem with quarter pounders. which caused E. coli in the onions. I don't know if you recall that or not.
I do.
So, which, you know, I mean, Taylor Farms is a huge company. So it kind of stands to reason a huge company is probably going to have, you know, problems from time to time. So basically, we're at 2,000 illnesses and 100 hospitalizations in Illinois and 8 other states. But now it's just the Taylor Farms iceberg lettuce. And that lettuce is distributed through different, like, food service operations, like hospitals. And then also affected are some of the Walmart market side products.
Good God.
But this is super important. Right now, illnesses are being reported in 41 states and more than 11,000 people sick with the cyclosporiasis. But it may not all be related to Taylor Farms. There may be other products that were sourced in central Mexico or that perhaps came in contact with another product. The FDA and the CDC have not figured it out yet. And, you know, the cyclospora is very serious. So again, if you're in one of those compromised groups, you should be extra careful. Because here's the thing, you can't kill the parasite unless you cook food to 158 degrees. Well, who cooks their lettuce? You know, one of the other foods that can be vulnerable is like raspberries. I mean, unless you're making jam, who cooks the raspberries?
Right.
Okay. So people just need to be really careful, but especially if you're someone who is in a compromised immunocompromised or pregnant or you just don't want to be sick.
Teresa, thanks for being with us. It's always great to hear from you, and I look forward to talking to you again. Thanks again.
Thanks for having us.
You bet.